Call it Senate Tax Committee to order. Members, today we have in front of us Senator Murphy with Senate File 3223. It's the 2008 Transportation Policy Bill. It has a number of tax provisions in it. That's why it's in front of us here today. Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I do have the A16 amendment. That is an amendment that we need to have offered up to get it into the shape that so that we can explain it correctly to the committee.
Senator Larson moves the A16 amendment.
Line by line here.
Yeah. Senator Murphy, what's contained in the A16?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and members, on lines point 12 through lines point 1.10 is this is just a grammatical fix that was suggested by the reviser. Line 1.11, this changes the maximum gross weight vehicle for canola hauling vehicles from 150,000 to 150,500 pounds, and that's just to be consistent with the North Dakota law. And this was a suggestion from the State Patrol. And you know, most of these are non-controversial items, Mr. Chairman. And I'll let you know when we hit one that has maybe a hiccup or two on it. The next one is down on line. The next big change is on line 1.12. And that's the deletion of Section 70, and that deals with Type 3 buses. This was Senator Olsen's bill, and as his bill was marching through the process, they deleted this section so that it would avoid any possible fiscal impact. So we're recommending that that the committee discharge that today. The next change starts on 1.13. And goes through 1.15. And this is just some conforming language on this section that established an advisory committee for non-motorized transportation. And I believe that that was a Jungbauer, Senator Dibble's bill. They've both been working on bikeways and pathways and things like that. So it's this is just a conforming change. The next change starts on 1.16 and goes down through 1.33, and this just moves language on the evaluation of the transit goals for disabled people to a different section of statute where it actually fits in better. The next change starts on 1.34 and goes on to 2.21, and what this does is it amends a section of law from the 76 laws to take out a reference to the advisory committee on bicycling and establishes advisory committee on non-motorized transportation. Then starting on page 2, line 22, this inserts a repealer of a law that is on all of those special plates for veterans that charges a $5 surcharge. That, you know, we always want the price of a plate to reflect what it is actually the cost of building that plate. And we've built enough of these plates where we don't need the $5 surcharge anymore. So that's the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Questions, members? On the A16 amendment, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Contrary, no. Motion prevails. The A16 is adopted. Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, to kind of expedite things, I'll just go through a sheet here that the staff put together that kind of shows where the tax implications are in this bill. Mr. Chairman and members, the first one is in Article 1. It starts on page 6, line 13 through 27. And these are wheelage tax exemptions for two-wheeled vehicles. This has absolutely no state impact. All this does is we're trying to clean up the law so that it's very clear that these mopeds don't have to pay a metropolitan wheelage tax. So they haven't been collecting it. It was a little gray in law. This just cleans it up. So this has no fiscal impact. The next change is, potential tax impact starts on page 7, lines 14 through 34. That's Article 1, Section 10 of the bill. It deals with special mobile equipment, and this was Senator Jungbauer's provisions. This is negligible to the state. There's a few pieces of special mobile equipment that are going to have to pay a little bit under this provision, and then there's some that are not going to have to pay. It just kind of cleans up the law so everybody's really clear about what a Y plate actually is. But it's negligible to the state, and I think it reflects that on the spreadsheet. I'll when we get to the spreadsheet, I'll maybe have Ms. Boyd talk about that, but I'll point out where the projected increases are and possible decreases that actually have something other than a negligible outcome. Once again, Article 1, page 10, lines 14 through 20. This deals with we need to back up. Article 1, page 8 through page 10 deals with tax exemptions for certain nonprofit vehicles. Once again, this is basically some cleanup language. It's a negligible cost to the state. And then on page 10, lines 14 through 20, we start in with some spotter trucks that are exempted from the motor vehicle tax. And once again, this is a negligible outcome for the state. Page 10, line 21 through 28, we deal with the concrete pumper issue. Once again, this tax rate is negligible to the state, and I don't believe that you're going to find anybody in the any of the concrete pumpers that are opposing any of these amendments. They like it. On page 70, once again, Article 1, there are sections 104 and 105. This is controversial, and this adds the cities of Farmington and Lakeville to the taxing, the transit taxing district in the metropolitan area. It's just basically asking these two areas of the state to pay their fair share for park and rides and things like this. The committee, on a bipartisan manner, voted to support this. There's a few committee members that weren't overly happy about it, but, you know, they kind of might represent that southwest corridor. Bottom line is that we're building more and more park and rides and adding more and more transit options in that Cedar Avenue, I-35W, Southwest Metro area, and we have a lot of people who are accessing those services that live either in Farmington or Lakeville that aren't paying for them. What this does is it doesn't really have an impact on the state, but it does on local property taxes, and it's a huge increase in taxes. I say that tongue-in-cheek. For a $100,000 home in Lakeville, it would be $10 a year. So that's, 84 cents or 83 cents a month. If it was a $250,000 home, it'd be about $25 a year increase. So it's not all that much to the homeowners. As a matter of fact, it's very negligible, but it does provide those services that a lot of people in the Southwest Metro area that are outside the transit district are using but not paying for. And I'll tell you, the park and rides, you can go almost any place in the metropolitan area, and they are absolutely full. There's people parking probably in places they shouldn't ought to be, and we need to increase the capacity of those, but we can't unless we have enough resources on the table to do it. This actually raises a substantial amount of money, and You know, we can build more park and rides with it. It's a great program, and, you know, there's no reason why the transit taxing district shouldn't be expanded to include at least Lakeville and Farmington. Many of us feel that it should be the whole metropolitan area, but then, you know, that would probably be a bigger change in transit policy than what the legislature is willing to do this year. Moving on to Article 2, on page 82, starting on lines 1 through the next page, at the very top, is a debt service charge that's not used in calculating a qualifying service station credit. Once again, I believe that this has a negligible note, or where is it?
It's that line.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's a line that shows that this does have an impact. And all right, I was thinking of something different. These are the service stations, and this is a projected hypothetical cost to the state. Because if we hadn't increased the gas tax, this wouldn't be here. So there's no way that this should actually even appear on here. But, you know, the people in revenue have to do their due diligence and say, okay, it's on here. But this would have never happened had we not increased the motor vehicle fuel tax. But what this does is for a qualifying service station who's within, I believe, 5 miles of the border, 7.5. It's a good thing staff's here today. Anyway, a little bit off. But within 7.5 miles of the North or South Dakota border or the Iowa border, those service stations will not have to charge this portion of that increased portion of the fuel tax. And that's the way it's always been. This is not a change in law. This just reflects what's going on out there and the fact that we did increase the motor vehicle fuel tax. So there is a projected hypothetical cost to the state. I think you could probably, you know, Mr. Chairman, if you wanted a zero number there, we would have to repeal the law. And I don't think that you're going to find Senator Langseth or very many on the border, except for us on the Wisconsin border, that are willing to do that.
So, Senator Murphy, so there's less tax collected within 5 miles or 7.5 miles of the border?
Correct.
Is that true for Wisconsin also?
Wisconsin's gas tax is substantially higher than Minnesota's, so we don't play under. This is only for those border states that have a lower gas tax than in Minnesota.
Okay. Well, Mr.
And now, you know, like North Dakota, I believe, is 21 or 22. We're going above them, and so it's that 3 or 4 cents that's not going to be collected.
Well,
and like I say, it's all hypothetical.
Mr. Chair, North Dakota is 23 cents now, so they're still a penny ahead of us. Next fall, we will be 2 cents ahead of them, so it doesn't kick in yet. It's anything over 3 cents. But for the future, if North Dakota weren't to raise it at all, then at some point we would probably go 3 cents ahead. But I don't know if that's ever going to happen because they're going to have to – they raise theirs whenever they have to keep from losing federal money. So I'm not sure if we'll ever quite get there. But it's there just in case there's a problem.
Mr. Chairman, that's never been an issue in the past. So And like I say, this is all a projected hypothetical cost to the state that, like I said, would have never happened if we had not have increased the motor vehicle fuel tax. The next one is page 85, lines 4 through 9, Article 2, Section 7, and this is a technical change to the registration tax. Okay. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that just takes out this ending date on this tax increase, and it's a technical change. It just kind of clears up a few things. Page 85, starting on lines 10 through the next page through line 4, and this is a motor vehicle leasing tax revenue allocation changes, and these are reflected in The spreadsheet down here where you see these big numbers starting in fiscal year 2011. And Mr. Chairman and members, the reason why this language is in the bill and that you see this transfer between the two funds is because when we were putting an amendment together to be offered on the House floor, a non-lawyer type put it together and gave it to the author of the bill, and it turned out that it did something that was not 180 degrees different than what we explained on the floor, but pretty close, and that's why these changes are in here, to reflect what we had intentionally done. So, members, if you all think we're expert attorneys and we can do the work of the attorneys, don't do it because it don't work. I did it. It didn't work, and I apologize. It was because of my mistake that this changes happened to be made in the bill. And then the last thing is in Article 2, Section 9, and this is a technical change to the metro area sales tax authorization. Once again, I believe that that's non-controversial. It's just a technical change. Yeah. Members, the controversial ones are the mistake that I made, and that's about it. So,
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got two questions, if I could bring your attention back to page 85. The first one is on line 8, page 85. Senator Murphy, either you could answer this or maybe counsel can. There's a change on date.
Mm-hmm.
What was the significance of changing that date? And if the legislature didn't do this, what is there anything in particular, any ramification that would be triggered?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and Senator Limmer, those two dates were put in there. Ms. McCormick from the Driver and Vehicle Services asked that we put that end date on there so that it was very clear that this was that first period of registration tax. And in no way, shape, or form was it ever intended to be only 1 year of increased registration tax. And we all knew that. We all knew what we were voting on. There's some discussion around if this date stays. There's some people who feel that we could, that our registration tax could be challenged in court. But Ms. McCormick, staff, the Transportation Committee, and I think the entire legislature knew what the intent was. And so we decided just go back, take that date out, because we all know that this was that one section was for that first year only, and then it was supposed to be a graduated increase through the projected lifetime of the endeavor. And there were some people that said, "Oh, okay, that tax is only good for 1 year," and it was clearly not the intention. And it was clearly not the intention of the administration when they asked us to put that date in there. They were just trying to make it very clear for themselves.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if we didn't make that change, what significant event could occur? Are we just trying to clear up potential confusion?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, exactly. We're just trying to clear up that potential for some sort of confusion. I mean, it was very clear, Senator Limmer, and I think everybody on the floor had a very good understanding of what we were voting on. And in committee, this issue never arose, but here a few weeks ago, the issue rose. And we just decided, okay, just strike the language. Ms. McCormick knows how to run her organization with or without that date in there. And so we just take it out.
All right. Mr. Chair, one other question. Senator Limmer, if I can bring you down to, on the same page, to line 25. We shifted that 50% of the revenues to a metropolitan routes of regional significance. It appears as though we're shifting that 50% from the county state aid highway fund. And I'm just wondering, are we replacing that fund revenue stream to the county aid state county state aid highway fund elsewhere in your bill?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Limmer, this is money inside the metropolitan area, and it's not like we're going to take it from the CASA formula in the metropolitan area and spend it in Red Wing, unless you want me to. No, okay. I didn't think so. But what we're doing here is, this was that amendment that I was talking about that yours truly crafted for the person who was explaining it on the House floor. I didn't do a very good job. But actually what we had meant to do was we were trying to solve the issue of what do we do with routes of regional significance in the metropolitan area, knowing that that is where a vast majority of traffic flow is on a daily basis. And in the metropolitan area, a little bit different than greater Minnesota, a lot of our county roads handle these routes of regional significance. And what we clearly intended to do was to make sure that those routes of regional significance, you've got a couple in your district, Senator Jungbauer does, I think Senator Johnson does, I know Senator Larson does, but we wanted to make sure that they were kind of in the front of the line, because that's where the higher volumes are at, and sometimes, unfortunately, that's where the higher volumes of serious crashes are. And so we wanted money dedicated to that to kind of, and that was clearly our intention the whole time. It wasn't to try to pick winners and losers. It was just trying to pick those routes that mean the most to legislators and to people who are driving back and forth to work.
Mr. Chair, the reason I bring this up is there's a CASA road in my district that comes directly south out of the little town of Osseo.
Yes.
And it's right on, it's a county road as it goes south. It borders on two cities, so both cities come up right on and share that road as a border. And yet at the same time, are we taking potential money that would have gone to that particular county state aid road and now dedicating it to more of the regional significant roads? Is it taking money from that target, or is there another place in the bill that would apply public monies to CASA roads somewhere else?
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, the short answer would be yes. The long answer is a little more complex, so if you give me just a second, I'll try to weave it together here for you. Now, I know which road you're talking about, and I do believe that that would be counted as a route of regional significance.
Oh.
I believe. I may be mistaken. We can get MnDOT or some of the county folks to talk to us kind of offline, but Here's the thing. We increased the tax, okay, the gas tax that's applied to the CASA formula. So everybody's boat rose. Every county in the state got an increase. And some counties, the county you live in, got more of an increase than some of the counties that I represent, and that reflected the change of the CASA formula so that there was more weight put on where the people actually live. And so in that scenario, all the boats floated at a higher level. Now, when we talk about the CASA formula and the loss in the CASA formula in the metropolitan area of this roughly $4 million, that would be like taking a drop out of the Pacific Ocean. So, on one hand, we're going to take a little bit of money away from the counties, the metropolitan counties, which, it probably makes them a little uncomfortable. Okay. And then we're going to turn around. We're going to basically give it right back to them. It doesn't have as much flexibility as it did before, but, it's a wash in the metropolitan area. And, once again, this This is a fix to the finance bill that yours truly was responsible for. And we explained all this on the House floor, on the Senate floor, as if the amendment that that the representative offered was written correctly and reflected our words.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if it helps to continue talking, but just by way of slightly more explanation, I think this came about as an effort to recognize that some of the balance of the bill was lost when the original proposal, which hung together, all the pieces hung together in terms of trying to strike balance between modes and geographic basis. When the half cent came down to a quarter cent, recognizing that in other parts of the bill, as Senator Murphy explained, had significant increase to the CASA account by quite a bit, with the formula change on the new money. Additionally, dollars come into the CASA account from the little 5% that we get to redirect every 6 years that comes into the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. And there was, some flexibility to the sales tax piece in the metro area that went away when it came down to a quarter cent. So this was an attempt to regain some of that flexibility for the road piece, so that places like Carver County and Scott County could enjoy a little bit of benefit from that, which went away. We're hoping that Carver and Scott would see that and come into the sales tax district, but they didn't, but they still get the benefit. It's fine. We're one Minnesota. But in no way should folks who benefit from the CASA formula outside of the metro area feel badly, because there's significant new dollars that are going there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is less than a couple $1 million I'm talking about here.
This is, Mr. Chairman, Senator Dibble hit the nail on the head. This is just a drop in the bucket of the CASA formula monies. I mean, it would be under, even though it's $4 million, which sounds like a whole lot, once again, it's still big picture, very small. I mean, very, very small.
Yeah. Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
I do need to note for the record, though, that the original deal, as was struck and crafted, saw to it that Metro Transit benefited from a little bit of this motor vehicle lease tax, and folks got anxious about that. They saw that as a loss. So, in a very magnanimous gesture on my part, so as to not create too much anxiety as we were moving towards the final passage of this bill, I receded from that position, but I maintain that the balance is a little off in this package, and we need to look at that in future years, because that's a bad precedent that we set. The motor vehicle sales tax, which the lease tax was considered a part of, was supposed to kind of not have any sort of, overreach in for any one mode. Everyone kind of participates in different proportions, and that went away in the course of discussions on this bill, and we'll revisit that subject in the future, keeping everyone whole but making sure that there's balance across the board.
Any other questions for Senator Murphy? Amendments. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm hoping that representatives from MnDOT can come and talk about the impact of the language relating to the Lafayette Bridge on page 72, and perhaps Senator Murphy can address what he's trying to accomplish there and how that language came about.
Oh. Senator Murphy?
Was MnDOT going to come up and make some comments? Mr. Chairman, this is the issue about the Lafayette Bridge, and we've had a lot of discussions on this. We put some, and it's on page 72 of the bill, starts up on line 1. And basically, the reason why this is in here, to study some sort of transit option on the Lafayette Bridge is pretty simple. A couple of years ago, we asked that they study that Robert Street area, you know, on the south side, even though they call it West St. Paul. I don't understand how they drew the map, but west is south and south is east, I think. I'm still confused, but okay, so that Robert Street area going out towards, you know, 494 and where all the car dealerships are, we wanted that studied because there's a high volume of traffic there, much like some of the other corridors around the metropolitan area, and trying to figure out what kind of transit option is best for that area. Senator Metzen had us, he carried a bill and it asked to study this in conjunction with, you know, some sort of rail transit. A couple things that we learned that we didn't know in the past was that little hill just on the south side of Cesar Chavez Avenue, it's at such an incline that we don't even send buses up that, let alone put a rail line on it. So they figured that you're going to have to deviate from that little hill area one way or the other, go up State Street or down State Street. And then they got to looking at the possibility of using the Robert Street Bridge. Well, we just built that bridge, and to put a transit line there of any sort, we'd have to build a new bridge, which is cost prohibitive. So they looked for a different route. Now, like I said, this has been studied for a couple years, been a lot of people involved. They said the only way that if you are going to do a transit option in the future is to reroute it over to Lafayette Bridge. What we asked, what Senator Metzen first asked, was to, when you do the plan, you have to include transit as a fully functional part of the bridge. We're not asking for that in here. We're just asking that the footings and the piers put in such a way that in the future, if we decided to do light rail, we would move forward with it and we would have a bridge that was already designed to handle it. If we don't do this and we decide to do it in the future, just the future environmental costs will be tens of millions of dollars of increased cost. So we thought that instead of trying to incur those costs in the future, we would just go ahead and plan and design a bridge that would handle these expanded footings.
Senator Ortman?
Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Murphy. I'm hoping that MnDOT will come and talk a little bit about the impact, because I think the idea is a good one, to make sure that the bridge has the ultimate functionality that we want when we build it. But I think some steps have already been taken towards construction of the Lafayette Bridge that leave MnDOT in the lurch a little bit here with this expansion of its role. And so either Mr. Rudin or Ms. Parker is here and hopefully can talk about that a little bit.
Sure. Sure. But, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Rudin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Eric Rudin with MnDOT Government Affairs. And Senator Ortman's correct. We have already started some preliminary work for replacing the Lafayette Bridge. Mm-hmm. I'd like to say we are intending to accommodate bus transit on the bridge itself, and so that's not a problem. And we agree it does make sense to accommodate transit as we're replacing the bridge. And we appreciate Senator Metzen's amendment in the Finance Committee. But our understanding is that Dakota County would still like to have accommodation for a separate structure, which at some future point could accommodate light rail transit. Mm-hmm. And because of the proximity to the St. Paul downtown airport, there are some height issues, and so light rail could not actually go on top of this bridge, but would require a separate structure. And our estimate at this time is that to simply do the footings for a future light rail bridge would cost somewhere in the neighborhood of up to $7 million. Now, to do the footings and the piers, and this bill currently requires the piers as well, we think would cost perhaps as much as $25 million. So at the very least, we'd like to perhaps maybe just do the footings, which has been done, for example, on the Bloomington Ferry Bridge. There are footings there. The piers really don't make a lot of sense to have there until you actually are putting a second structure in. But and then also the issue of how these would be paid for, whether that should be a trunk highway expense or if some other funding source could be made available to pay that additional cost.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Rudin, can you talk about that part in particular where you left off on the trunk highway funds? MnDOT doesn't typically use trunk highway funds for that purpose. Is that the point here?
Mr. Chair and Senator Ortman, that's correct. For example, on the Bloomington Ferry Bridge, that was actually built as a Hennepin County bridge, and my understanding was there were some state GO bonds that helped pay for that bridge. And so this would be, I mean, if we were to cover this cost with trunk highway funds, I believe this would be the first time that we have made this expense for light rail accommodation. Now, there was on the 35W bridge, you may recall, an accommodation to the structure for light rail, future light rail. And those costs were not eligible to be paid with federal funds, and so that, that was a bit of a unique circumstance, perhaps, but we're still unsure as to how that additional expense for making that bridge light rail ready will be covered.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, just so, because I thought, and I'm not being critical, Mr. Rudin, here, but that Bloomington Ferry Bridge was primarily federal money, and the state had money in it as well. If that makes any difference. The majority of it was paid by the feds, but the state paid the rest. All we're asking here is for planning money to the plan. Works out that it doesn't fit in the plan, then it doesn't go anyplace. So what's the problem with planning?
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair and Senator Murphy, I don't have any problem with planning. I think it makes an awful lot of sense to do that, but I think that Dakota County should participate in the costs of planning to the extent that we're actually going to take steps that cost money to do this when trunk highway funds aren't actually typically used for that purpose. And I think it's appropriate that trunk highway funds not be expanded to that use because they really are intended to benefit all highway users and not local communities. I mean, we have formulas for that, and that's why we try to stick to the tradition. Perhaps Senator Metzen wants to talk about that, but it seems to me that we should be asking Dakota County to pay for some of these costs because the light rail is it's not a road function. Light rail transit is not for roads. It's a different mode of transportation.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Murphy.
But we're talking about a bridge. We're talking about planning. We're talking about not a piece of equipment that is only used by the locals. Now, if you look at any of the transit options that we have, well, not any. Let's just look at the one rail transit line that we have available in Minnesota. Now, during the day, most of the riders aren't from Minneapolis, St. Paul. So I don't know how we can say that that is a local project. It's not. It benefits everyone in the entire state, especially those in the Southwest Metro. Now, and this is a big if we decide to move forward with this project in particular, you can bet that the majority of the riders won't be from St. Paul, even though the terminus would be in St. Paul. They'll be from the other side of the river, which includes my constituents, which includes all the constituents all up and down Highway 52, because many of us are tired of paying for parking in the metropolitan area where that will cost you about $100 a month. It's a lot cheaper to stop at Fort Snelling and pay to park there for a month and pay for the light rail than it is to drive into downtown Minneapolis and just pay for your parking. I
mean, Senator Ortman.
It's not
Mr.
a local
Chair,
project.
Mr. Chair and Senator Murphy, we just raised, I understand the Dakota County Board just raised its sales tax to pay for transit options, and it would seem to me that those funds would be appropriate for this, but this is not appropriate for trunk highway funds.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's not true. I mean, you know, it's been done in the past. We've used a lot of gas tax money, trunk highway money, to plan. I mean, if you don't plan, you get a system that is just thrown together willy-nilly, and I don't think that's what we want.
Senator Moy.
I yield to Senator Metzen, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Dakota County has been mentioned 10 times here. The bridge is in Ramsey County. And the hopes that this will service constituents all the way down to Red Wing, Rochester, and beyond. So, again, these bridges are designed for 100 years, I believe. And we've already committed through Senator Lanx's committee and the bonding committee $500,000 to plan this transitway. We've got 8-10 schematics drawing already on the board, and they're doing their job, not just Dakota County, Ramsey County, and Senator Sinjum signed on my original bill. This is kind of a little dream, but our dream is to get this to Rochester, Minnesota. It'll serve two junior colleges out our way. And again, you get one shot at this. This bridge is scheduled to be completed before the one had collapsed. It is in tough shape, so it's going to be done. Now, if we skip this one chance, now is the chance. It'll be quadruple the price 15, 20 years from now, and it'll pale the $7 million down the road. But that corridor is, in my estimation, is greatly needed. The Dakota County, not just Dakota County, but Point South, Goodhue, and others, I mean, that transitway is just, it's nuts, the people that are using 52. That's the only way to really get there, except if you go through the Mendota Bridge and around Minneapolis. So that's the route from southeastern Minnesota. So if we skip this chance, we're missing a big thing at this point. Now's the time to plan and to do this. It's a small price to pay that could be many, many times and later on.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and members, this is basically the way that the transit option was paid for on the I-35W bridge. I mean, it's, you got to plan for these things, and this is just planning money.
Mr. Chairman, I suggest that maybe later on that fund you talked about from Ramsey and Dakota and the metro areas could be tapped for part of this later on. I think that's an option.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, I don't dispute the value of the project or the money that would be spent on this. I do challenge the way it's being spent. I mean, the pot of money that's involved here. And I do want to offer the A-17 for purposes of discussion. What it would do is ask that Dakota County reimburse the commissioner for complying with the
cost. Let me try this again.
Wait, Senator Metzen. Senator Ortman's got an amendment. Senator Ortman. Continue explaining it. It's being handed out.
Yes. Mr. Chair and members, the A-17 amendment would essentially ask that the costs for complying with the height restrictions imposed by the Federal Aviation Administration and the costs for laying these footings would be reimbursed by Dakota County in the future. That we can help them, but they should be able to pay for these costs and that they should not ultimately come from the trunk highway funds.
Mrs. Schmidt.
Can I try one more time?
Senator Metzen.
This is not a Dakota County issue only. This is a statewide significant corridor. I don't think you ask one county to pay for a service that's going to connect 12 to 14 counties southeastern Minnesota. If you want to go this route, I think you tie them all in somehow. It's not a Dakota County bridge. The bridge, I'm going to say it again, is physically in Senator Pappas's district. It's not in Dakota County. So to ask one county to front something for the whole southeastern Minnesota is not right.
And, Mr. Chairman, one more time. This is...
Senator Murphy.
This is not the deal that Hennepin County got. This amendment is not the deal that Hennepin County got.
Senator Dibble.
And I just want to say one more time what Senator Metzen said. The bridge, it's not even in Dakota County.
So I don't get the amendment,
Senator Dibble.
One, and I oppose the amendment, okay?
Senator sure. Dibble, on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I had an issue, you know, to the earlier discussion about use of trunk highway bonds and that sort of thing. Well, I guess this is to the amendment. It is not unprecedented or unwarranted for trunk highway bonds to be used for transit purposes in a highway corridor. We've done that quite a bit. We've built park and ride lots, the shoulders, the buses that run up and down specific routes and corridors. And the rationale is, you know, that's a highway purpose, and it can't be disputed that when you throw a very high-quality transit service on a particular transportation corridor, because that's what it is. It's about moving people and goods. It's not about just putting people in cars and running them on asphalt. It's about putting people, moving, you know, using a corridor for transportation purposes. A great analogy is the kind of volume that bus rapid transit on 35W is going to take. That will be the equivalent to 2.5 lanes of single occupant vehicle traffic. That's significant, and that's appropriate to use a similar same funding source. And probably the dumbest thing we ever did in this metropolitan area was not build the Cedar Avenue bridge so that it could accommodate rail. Another dumb thing we did was build that Hiawatha flyover Lake Street not to accommodate light rail transit. And everyone expected that, you know, we've got these big, robust bridges, and we'll just throw those tracks right across. And we had to build wholly separate structures at great expense, which caused Phil Kroenke to, you know, be able to raise all kinds of ruckus about how much money we're spending on these things. And to fail to do that in this instance will just create the kind of expense that Senator Metzen described.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. You know, when I listened to Mr. Rodine's testimony, I heard him talk about these aviation requirements that were causing us problems with this bridge. And I thought, well, geez, what's that? What can that be about? But I thought, well, this is not the Transportation Committee, so I wouldn't ask about it. But here we have an amendment that is talking about height restrictions imposed by the Federal Aviation Administration on a north-south road that's running parallel to a north-south runway. And I'm trying to figure out how we can't, in the planning, work through these height restrictions on a north-south road parallel to a north-south runway. It doesn't make any sense. I think this is foolishness to be. What is the deal with the FAA and the height restrictions that you can't work that out by changing the configuration of the bridge a little bit? It's, you know, I don't know how many hundreds of feet in the air it is, but you certainly could work through that.
Mr. Chairman, and
Senator Murphy,
Senator Skoy brings up a good, good argument in there. And you know, if anybody sit there and they've watched the operations at home at field, and or if you're coming across the bridge and you see the planes land, most of the time when those planes are landing, they're well above that area of where the bridge is. And Senator Skoy, you're right. Most of the time, their operations are north south. You know, but you know, the FAA wears the big they wear the big pants on the block, and you know, if they don't like something that you're doing, it comes down basically that you have to change what you're doing. And
well, Mr. Chair, but to Senator Murphy, then why not lower the bridge 10 feet to account for the height of the train? I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and Senator Skoy, that's exactly what the idea is with the people who are involved in this project, is to just, you know, have your regular bridge that's going to be replaced by MnDOT, and then the secondary bridge, and have it on the same footings, but a little bit lower. And that way that would accommodate for all the overhead electrical use and things like that. But
it'll be lower. Yeah. That's right. Good point.
Because there's plenty of room for the, you know, for the river transportation traffic to move up and down. You know, their height requirements are, you know, that bridge is well up into the air. And
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, two things. There's already quite a bit of trunk highway money involved in the construction of this bridge. It's the expansion that we're talking about now. The bridge is already underway. It's the expansion to accommodate light rail. And I'm wondering
it's not underway.
The bridge is not underway.
The planning is underway.
Just like
that. Mr. Chair, if Mr. Rudin could, I would appreciate it if he would testify about why MnDOT believes Dakota County should be participating in these costs and what the FAA restrictions are.
Mr. Chair, as far as the FAA restrictions are, Senator Murphy addressed this a little bit, but he's correct that we have to get clearance from the FAA for a structure within a zone near the airport. I mean, the expansion at Regents Hospital had an issue with the cranes they were using for that expansion due to FAA restrictions because of the downtown airport. So, yes, this would require a separate second structure, so it's slightly different from 35W bridge in that respect, in that the light rail on 35W is envisioned one day potentially in the future to go right on the actual roadway structure, whereas this would be a separate structure completely. And the reasoning behind asking Dakota County to participate in the cost was that after the amendment was added in the Finance Committee, at first reading, we assumed that perhaps it was just referring to accommodating bus transit on the existing or the planned replacement for the Lafayette Bridge, which we're already planning to do. But then in checking with Dakota County staff, they felt that a separate second structure is what they wanted accommodation for. And so that's why we were asking them to help participate in these costs.
Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Rudin, Senator Ortman seemed to imply that this was an amendment that MnDOT helped to draft.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Mr. Rudin, it seems rather punitive and very political to offer this type of amendment for Dakota County when, like Senator Metzen and everyone has said, it's not even in Dakota County. Why not just make it for, Ramsey County or Carver County for that matter? I think we should just vote this amendment down and move
Carver.
On.
Sirma.
Mr. Chair, I wonder if Mr. Rudin could clarify for me. I'm not as familiar with the different planning processes that goes into things like this. And in your earlier testimony, you indicated that the Lafayette Bridge is in the preliminary, has been through the preliminary stage. And so could you explain a little bit how preliminary is preliminary?
Mr. Chair and Senator Moy, we've looked at the scoping options, which we considered rehabilitating the existing bridge, building a new bridge to carry traffic in one direction and using the existing bridge for traffic in the other direction, or building a new bridge. And these are steps we have to go through for any bridge project to evaluate all those alternatives. And the decision has been made to replace the existing bridge with an entirely new structure. So that that has been done. We're hiring or using consultant to do a scope of service to complete environmental work to determine the type of the structure, whether it should be concrete or steel or the type of the structure that should be built, and also to prepare preliminary plans. And that work is when these types of decisions need to be made. So.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this amendment's not going to go on the bill. I can tell you that right now. But I would like to have a portion of this amendment on the bill, and that's line 1.2. And if somebody would make the amendment to delete lines 1.3 through 1.6, I would be more than happy to take the amendment if it was only line 1.2.
Senator Larson moves to divide the amendment between line 1.2 and 1.3.
Mr. Chair, I would move that first part of the amendment.
Senator Ortman moves line 1.2 for approval. All in favor, Senator Dibble?
Mr. Chair, to Senator Murphy, if we're just planning at this point,
right.
Why not consider what it might take to to build the piers as well. So we're not obligating ourselves to $25 million necessarily, but we get some sense. So I think I'm not comfortable with even line 1.2.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Murphy, if Dakota County wants to participate, isn't this usually handled with a joint powers agreement? This seems
could be.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson, it could be. I mean, you know, the state enters into an agreements with counties and local jurisdictions all the time. That's not a big thing. And if, you know, the county and MnDOT wanted to figure out who was going to pay for this, they could do it in some other agreement. We don't need legislation.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, maybe for MnDOT, I just was curious if anybody ever talked, if this is height restrictions because the airport, about talking with the Airports Commission about it, because in the case of the Mall of America, the Airports Commission, when they made their runway decisions and because of their height restrictions, they actually paid off the Mall of America, not for property that had been built yet, but the property that might be built. And I just thought if the Airports Commission was paying that one off, this would be an appropriate way to look if it came to that at some point, too.
All right. Sir Murphy, on the committee adopting line 1.2, what's your preference? You're the author of the bill.
Mr. Chairman, that's the part of the amendment that I think makes sense. And to answer Senator Dibble's question, you know, the piers part of the bridge is something that comes along afterwards. You know, the footing is the important part, and once the footing is established, and say 15, 20 years from now that we want to come and do light rail or whatever. I mean, they may have hovercraft by then. Who knows? You know, we'll be able to design and build the rest of the structure, which includes the piers. It's not – you don't need to – it's not imperative, right, Mr. Rudin, to plan for the piers at this point. It's not imperative.
On the motion to adopt line 1.2, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Contrary, no?
No.
No.
Motion prevails. Line 1.2 is adopted. On the balance of the amendment, lines 1.3 through 1.6. Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, 2 points. First, to Senator Stevens' point, it's my understanding that this did not come to the Transportation Committee. It was added in the Finance Committee. And it's perfectly appropriate for MnDOT to call time and say, maybe we should look at the impacts of this and the cost of that. And as a member of the Transportation Committee, I thought it was perfectly appropriate. Secondly, Mr. Chair, I guess I'd ask Mr. Rudin, the costs for the footings and not just the piers are both much less. And I'm wondering if you can talk about the fiscal impact to the Trunk Highway Fund if we just do the footings.
Well, sir, I mean, we've already made that decision. The committee's made that decision. We're not going to do the piers. We're going to do just the footing. Senator Larson.
Mr. Chair, I'm just trying to figure out if we should be offering the rest of the divided amendment or not, and I'm inclined not to, but I'm hoping Mr. Rudin can help me with that.
Mr. Rudin. Chair and Senator Ortman, we don't have an exact cost, but we expect that to construct the footings would be in the range up to $7 million. It could be slightly less than that. By deleting the piers, that could have gotten up to $25 million. So it is a much reduced expense to the amendment.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Rudin, I'm wondering why you'd draft language that – I don't get the connection between a decision by the FAA. And let me preface that by saying I represent a community that is impacted a great deal by – and Senator Dibble, I think, would agree with me – him having a similarly impacted district, that the FAA decisions, there's very little local impact or local advice that is received by the FAA. We oftentimes try to give the advice, but it's not often received, and we're not listened to. Those decisions come down, mm-hmm. and yet there's a trigger here that says because the FAA did this or is saying this, Dakota County should pay. And I don't understand that connection. Well, why a federal government decision would mean that Dakota County should pay for something that isn't even in Dakota County.
On the Ortman motion to adopt line 1.3 to 1.6.
Mr. Chair, I've not made that motion.
Sir, Ms. Hertman, you offered the A-17 amendment.
Mr. Chair, I offered it for purposes of discussion. I have not moved the second part
of
the language.
Ms. Hertman, would you like to move 1.3 to 1.6, or can the committee move on? We've got other amendments.
Mr. Chair, I don't believe I'm going to move it. I would just like Mr. Rudin to clarify that the reason here was because Dakota County was the one that asked for a separate structure over and above what was already there.
Mr. Chairman, I think we've beaten it to death. Let's vote. Let's either vote or move on.
Does anybody want to move lines 1.3 to 1.6? If not, it's withdrawn.
Mr. Chair.
Sir, double.
I have to say for the record, though, I did talk the FAA into doing something once. We had a cell phone tower that was painted orange and white, and it made all the neighbors cranky. We talked them into letting us paint it brown. So
does it still have
I have
a light
one on
it?
My not one notch on my.
Still have a light on it?
It has a light on it. I do have an amendment, Mr. Chair.
Sir, double.
I have the A-20 amendment. Thank you. Mr. Chair, we had some discussion. Senator Murphy went and a little bit of detail about the Metropolitan Transit Taxing District.
Thank you.
The And currently in the bill, the transit taxing district is expanded to Farmington and Lakeville only. But in our own tax bill, we extend the transit taxing district to encompass the entire metropolitan area. It doesn't increase the overall Metropolitan Council levy for transit capital purposes, but it does recognize who's paying and who's benefiting from transit today, the park and rides and the express routes and the opt-out routes that come that serve the whole entire metropolitan area. And so this amendment would bring this bill into conformance with the position we've already taken as this committee.
Any questions, members? Senator Limmer.
Thank you. Senator Dibble, is this amendment a design to raise more money for transit purposes?
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, no, not necessarily, though that is possible. That wouldn't happen in this biennium because the authorization of the Met Council for about $33 million in transit capital levy remains the same. And, you know, the Metropolitan Council comes forward every year with their levy request, and, you know, that's keyed off of, you know, their identified need in the plan. You know, the Metro Transit operations directly, the paratransit, the contract providers, the opt-outs, et cetera. This simply ensures that those who are benefiting from that effort are also sharing in the expense.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Limmer, I think it's just spread on a larger tax capacity.
I have maps.
Right. I think I've even seen your maps. But
yeah. Probably they have red dots on them. I have a whole stack of them here if you want me to pass them out.
Do the individual local political subdivisions, do they have a option to exclude themselves from this taxing authority? Do they have to have a buy-in? Do they have to make a decision to do that?
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, no. This would be a levy that's is carried out by the Metropolitan Council.
So the political subdivisions have no choice in it, even if they do not have a transit service going to their community. They still may be taxed as a result of this amendment.
Senator Seidman, I think that's true, Senator Limmer.
Yeah, but Mr. Chair, right now, transit service is two points. One is there is transit service actually being provided to those metropolitan communities that aren't paying for it directly. We have some of the contract transit and paratransit that's going beyond the transit taxing district, being paid for entirely by folks inside the transit taxing district, number one. Number two, we have literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people driving into and parking at the park and ride lots and hopping on to the opt-out services and the transit services, and they're not paying for it either. So there may not be a there isn't in a small in some instance physical location of transit outside of areas where it's paid for, but in those cases where it maybe not be physically present, like in the form of a park and ride or lots and lots of regular route service, folks are certainly using it from those communities. I will also add that this will allow those capital expenditures to occur outside the transit taxing district where there's a great deal of demand. Specifically in the case of the UPA, there's a desire to put one of those park and rides a little further south in Lakeville, but that's not allowed under the current regime.
Senator Steven.
Mr. Chair, I will support this amendment, but I'd just like to bring to the committee's attention because of the line item veto by the governor of the Central Corridor and all of the various transit ways in the transportation bill, many communities in the East Metro that were looking forward to expanded transit services saw their hopes dashed by those line item vetoes. So communities such as Hastings, which are not included in the transit taxing district, of course, would have benefited significantly by the expansion of Central Corridor and the Red Rock Corridor eventually. And, of course, the governor vetoed those projects. So even though Hastings is currently not now in the transit taxing district, I just think it's important for us to realize that some communities are much more significantly by the taxing district than others.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is probably a technical question, but do we have in statute a definition of the metropolitan area since that's the way this amendment is crafted?
Counsel.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, yes, there is a definition of metropolitan county.
So, Mr. Chairman and Counsel, takes all this defining language out and expands it. So we are expanding this.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, this would expand it to the entire metropolitan area of towns and cities like listed here.
Mr. Chair and Council, is it like a 20% expansion, 30% expansion?
Mr. Chair, I'd have to yield to Senator Dibble and his maps to say exactly the area of the land mass.
Well, based on my guess is, Senator Johnson, the better question is what kind of additional tax capacity are we adding? And I suspect we're probably adding a small amount of tax capacity compared to what's currently being taxed.
And Mr. Chair, that goes to my question, and this visual is helpful, and could you please explain it?
Senator Dibble.
I hear you. Mr. Chair, would others like the map? The simple explanation is the current Metropolitan Transit Taxing District is a subset of the seven county metropolitan area. This amendment simply conforms the transit taxing district to the seven county metropolitan area.
And could you tell me my color?
Oh, the light, and that's the light green area on the map.
Okay.
The dark green is kind of the collar counties.
So that's what we're expanding to?
No, just Mr. Chair. We're just expanding it to the light green area, just the seven county metropolitan area. The purpose of the dark green is just for illustrative purposes to show where folks are driving in from to the transit taxing district to park their cars in the park and ride lots and hop on the buses that are paid for by the people only inside the black line. So there are people.
So the black line is current, and we're going out to the green.
To the edge of the light green.
Well, that Mr. Chair, that's a good 40% expansion.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Johnson, I think my point is when you look at the new tax capacity captured, it's probably relatively small compared to the property that's currently being taxed.
Any more?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, and
Senator Murphy.
To that point, the chair, I think, stated it correctly. In the number of dollars and cents, it would be much less than the geographic area as far as the money that was paid in. I mean, Senator Johnson estimates about 40% increase in the geographic area, but the amount of money that's currently being taken in is on the high-value areas. Mr. Chairman, and kind of to that point, this would mean about a $4 cut on those properties that are a year to those properties that are currently paying, and about a up to about a $25 a year increase to the properties that are currently not paying. And once again, I think the numbers run just like what we were talking about earlier. If $100,000 home, it's like a $10 a year increase. $250,000, it's like $25. I mean, it's nominal.
On the A20 amendment, members, I should say this provision is already carried in the Senate tax bill that's passed, so there's nothing new here. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Contrary, no. Motion prevails. A20 is adopted. Other amendments? If nobody else has anything, I'm going to hand the gavel over to Senator Larson, and I would like to offer the A19 amendment.
Senator Bach offers the A19 amendment. Senator Bach.
As it's being handed out, members, I'll explain the situation we're in. There was a trunk highway project on Highway 53 in the city of Duluth that was advertised for bids, and the bids closed on the 25th of January. And in the process of, during the period of time when the project was advertised, MnDOT discovered that there was a city ordinance in Duluth that created some problems with the design of the project, and the city ordinance needed to be amended. And the city agreed to amend their ordinance, but said it would take them a couple months to accomplish that. So what ended up happening was the bids were opened on the 25th of January, and there was an apparent low bidder, a responsible bidder, on budget. Everything would have worked fine. The 30-day period under which MnDOT had the authority to make the award was closing in, and MnDOT made a decision that because the city had not had the opportunity to amend their ordinance, their only option was to just reject all the bids. And the city of Duluth has consequently gone through the process, amended the ordinance, and effective April 24th, the ordinance will have been amended to accommodate the project. What the amendment does is says that they have to award to the low bidder that was the apparent low bidder on the 25th of January at the price that it was bid at, and the contractor agrees to not subject the state to any additional costs incurred because of the delayed award. So the contract is being awarded based on the number that was opened on the 25th of January. So it's kind of a delayed award situation. The contractor agrees not to charge MnDOT any additional costs because of a delayed award. MnDOT's only other option is to re-advertise the project and bid it out again. There are a couple small changes as a result of in the project. But members, when the contractor bid the project, contractors put, probably in the case like this, in a $20 million project, tens of thousands of dollars into putting a bid together. It wasn't the contractor's fault that MnDOT had overlooked a city ordinance, and the contractor shouldn't lose the money that they invested in putting a legitimate bona fide bid together because of an oversight on the part of MnDOT that has now been resolved with the city. So I just don't see any reason that if the contractor is willing to do the project, not charge anything for the delay in the award, that we don't award to them. If you simply rebid the project, everybody knows what the low bidder's number is now. And it really isn't fair the second time around that the project just becomes an auction. It's just not fair to the bidder that was low the first time around. So now that the city ordinance has been amended, the project can go forward. The contractors agreed to not charge anything for the delayed award, and that's what the amendment does. So I appreciate your support.
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, this amendment is acceptable, and with at least with myself, MnDOT still has a little bit of heartburn about having to do this, but they've worked with Senator Bach, and they like this language 1,000% better than the language that's in the House bill. It doesn't mean that we're done working on this issue, Senator Bach. I think there's probably still a few things to kind of upgrade a little bit to make everybody's comfort level appropriate. But for right now, this is a lot better than for the department than what the House has in their bill.
On the A-19 amendment, any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
And Mr. Chairman,
other amendments, members?
Mr. Chairman, there may be one other amendment in regards to design build that someone may want to offer, Senator Langseth. And then I could probably explain it. And this deals with the design build criteria. We heard this bill in our committee, and we made some changes, and we stepped back and kind of thought about it for a little bit.
Senator Murphy, let's get it in front of the committee.
Okay.
Senator Langseth?
Mr. Chairman, I propose the A-15 amendment.
Senator Langseth moves the A-15. Senator Murphy?
Mr. Chairman, this deals with the design build law. This basically puts a couple of parameters in place when using design build. Like I said, we heard this in committee. We tried kind of working on it. I think that there are some unresolved issues with this amendment, and I would hope that MnDOT gets their time to come to the table and talk about it. But, what we're doing here is in Subdivision 11, we're just asking that there's audio recordings of the meetings with the proposers and, some of the technical staff when they're putting these the scoring methodology and some of the technical proposals for the evaluations in place. We want those meetings recorded. There's also some compensation pay for the technical review committee on that first page. The second page talks more about the audio recordings. And then there's some information in there on the RFQ. Talks more about the technical committees. And then there is some language. Let's see here. Okay, here it is. Oh, here it is, Mr. Chairman. It's on line 4.4, and it talks about the what MnDOT would have to reject as a high bidder. So if you were 120% over the lowest bidding amount, you would be excluded from participating in the contract award. In other words, if it was a $100 million project, somebody bid $121 million, they would be excluded, period. I mean, I believe in design build, and I'll go on the record for it. I think design build has proven itself as to being an effective tool in the toolbox. But the problem is that we don't have a cap on it. Now, members in the legislature, we put caps on everything because we don't want the spending to run away. Now, do we want best value? Yes, we do. But are we willing to pay 122% over the value to get best value? Or do we want to pay 180% over to get the best value? There has to be a cap. And that's what this is talking about, is basically putting a cap in place. I think it's just fiscally prudent. Some other folks don't. Further down the on that page, there it talks about some other issues that MnDOT has to abide by during the. And granted, the I-35W bridge collapse was probably not a. It probably wasn't the picture-perfect model by which to sell, design, build around the world, knowing that there were a few hiccups inside, which is basically insider baseball. On the outside, everything looks great, but on the inside, there was a little hiccup here and there. My feeling is that we're getting a very good bridge. It is costing more. But at the end of the day, we're going to have a bridge that's not only going to handle the volume of traffic into the foreseeable future, but it's also going to be ready for transit operations. And the other thing is it is aesthetically appealing. It's not one of these ugly, I shouldn't call the Eisenhower Bridge in Red Wing ugly. But it's not as attractive as the bridge that's being built in Minneapolis. And I think that that's worth something for the community and for the public at large. But I don't believe it's worth $70 million more or $100 million more dollars. But it is worth a little bit more. And so we've built some things in here to kind of put a cap on the price, kind of clean up some of the other issues that arose. There is a court case that is pending over this, and this is not meant to preclude anything, any of the findings that may come out in the court costs or in the court action at a later date. Members, I feel strongly that design build is a great tool to use, but I don't think that we need to use it at the at the expense of our taxpayers, and that's why we put the 120% cap in there.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Murphy, I just have a question on page 1. The end of line 27 and then line 28 and 29, the second part of that new language, what problem are you trying to solve there? It looks like you're creating a floor for the level of someone who serves on the technical review committee above at administrative engineer, senior administrative engineer or above, mm-hmm. to be on the technical committee. But it's sometimes in the department because of the nature of political appointments at the very top, not having a top ceiling on that causes me some concern that it is possible that the higher we go, the less technical expertise we have. And so I'm just curious what problem this is attempting to solve.
Well, Mr. Chairman, sometimes on these technical review committees, and Senator Larson, I think, might have touched on the crux of the problem, and maybe this is just a problem of appearances and not actually a problem of reality, but the appearance is that we have some folks that are working on technical review committees whose backgrounds may not rise to the level of some other people who may be available at the same time to do that work as well. I believe, and we can have testimony on this, but I believe that having someone of a senior administrative engineer or above is only a wise thing to do. We're talking about more experienced people who have hopefully a more broad array of knowledge on all the issues and bring that to the table. I'm not saying that the Technical Review Committee in any of the past instances of using this tool have done anything wrong. I'm just saying that in the future, I think that maybe we might be able to get a better outcome if we have a few more senior people sitting on that review committee.
Senator Larson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Murphy. I guess the part that I'm trying to understand better is does level of senior administrative engineer or above mean above mean a higher technical expertise, or does it mean higher in the structure at MnDOT?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that that we've crafted this to get the most experienced person or persons possible, regardless of whether they fall at the top of the food chain or at the bottom.
Okay.
We want people that are making the decisions on this on these technical review committees to be hopefully some of the best experts.
Senator Moi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Murphy, I'm wondering if was this amendment or was this issue dealt with in Transportation Committee?
Mr. Chairman, we heard plenty of testimony, Senator Ma, and committee. We laid it on the table, if my Ms. Pierzowski says we laid it on the table. I don't believe the committee was ready to act at that time, and this was my bill. I asked that it be put on the table.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, I know that I'm on the Transportation Committee, too, and I guess I'm a little bit concerned that if the Transportation Committee wasn't ready to act on this, that for us to deal with it in a tax committee, I don't know if we're going to be able to have the appropriate testimony or the appropriate individuals to give input given that it wasn't ready to be acted on the Transportation Committee. So, I just want to put that out there. And given that this is really a transportation decision, if the tax committee is going to act on this, I guess I'd like to hear from the department about what impact this would be, just to refresh our recollections on what the department's input is. But I'm a little bit concerned that we're acting on transportation policy outside of the Transportation Committee.
Somebody from the department want to speak to the A15 amendment?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Betsy Parker from MnDOT. The department does have a lot of concerns about this amendment. We did express them in the Senate Transportation Committee. We have been working with Representative Kalin in AGC in the House on the House bill to attempt to resolve some of the issues related to the bill. The bill makes approximately 10 changes to the existing design build law, and we have actually agreed to about 6 of them so far. And there are some that remain serious problems for MnDOT. As Senator Murphy noted, there is a lawsuit going on, and it directly relates to one of the issues that is in this law, and it has to do with whether or not the commissioner made a proper determination about whether the contractors who responded to the 35W request for proposals were responsive or not. That is the central issue in the lawsuit, and this bill would attempt to change that to limit the commissioner's discretion to determine responsiveness, which we object to because it's being litigated. It's scheduled for trial in November. And secondly, because we think it's an inappropriate way to handle best value contracts. The other thing that really worries us is the price cap, and that is for two reasons. One, that last session, you remember, the legislature enacted best value legislation for all the other agencies in the state. We've had our best value legislation since 2001. We've used it 7 times previously, I would say to great acclaim, projects that have made people very happy. And no serious problems had arisen with respect to it until the 35W project, which was certainly unique in the history of Minnesota and we hope will never be repeated again. The problem with the price cap, though, is that it attempts to limit the commissioner's ability to select a project based on other things that we think are actually more important than price. And if one were to consider price a very important consideration, one would not be concerned about what was the lowest price someone else bid. One rightly should be concerned about how much money did the department set aside and estimate for this project.
That is the number that's important, and how much, what estimate did the Federal Highway Administration consider appropriate? It's a false comparison to think that the most important consideration is what the lowest bidder thought was the appropriate price for a best value contract. In fact, we do an engineer's estimate on every project, and that is our guiding principle, is do we have the money, and what is the relationship of the bids, in the case of low bid, to the MnDOT estimate and FHWA's concern. And when we do best value, it's very important to understand that we are not giving the proposers who respond a design, construction specifications, or any details about how to build what we want. We are asking them to propose all of that to us, and once we select one of those people, the price cap puts a limit on what they can actually design. And although we have oversight, it's a very serious worry to have an artificial price cap imposed. If we wanted to have a price cap or felt that it was important, we could do that now under our criteria. We are not prevented from that. And that sort of restriction applies to no other agency, county, or board that has authority to use best value. It is solely an outgrowth of a disagreement by the contractors who did not get the bid on the 35W bridge contract. And we think that that is an extremely unusual situation. And I would like to point out that although there is concern over the price we paid for the 35W bridge, we are getting a 100-year design, which was proposed by the contractor who got it and no other contractor. Smart bridge technology, which is built into the bridge to monitor the structural condition of the bridge, which was proposed by the contractor we selected and no other proposer. And a design charrette, which enabled the citizens of Minneapolis to participate in the selection of the design, which was proposed by no other responder to that contract. And those are the kinds of things that we are very concerned about, and we think that there are a number of things in this bill that we can and have agreed to. Most of them can be implemented without enacting this into law. But the issue about allowing the department discretion to select the responsive bidder, which is allowed to every other user of best value, and the issue about the price cap are very serious concerns to us. And our bridge engineers are very nervous about the prospect of using this kind of law on another major river crossing bridge.
Mr. Chair.
Sir Murphy.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the only thing I can say is that two things. One, the state is in a deficit situation. Even though we just passed a funding bill for MnDOT that increases the amount of money they have by $660 million a year, the state is still in a budget crunch. There's not another agency out there that is going to look at two bids, one being $100 million, one being $120 million, and pick the $120 million dollar project. It's just not going to happen, folks. And we can't spend money like drunk sailors. Yes, we want design build, we want best value. But when that best value is more than we can legitimately afford to pay, then we can't do it. We can't do it. We just plain can't do it. If you have four bridges, and you decide you're going to do design build, and you have $415 million to spend on those four bridges, and they all come in at $120 million, guess what? We're not going to fix four bridges. But if we put a cap on there, a reasonable cap, we're going to fix four bridges. So this is a decision that we need to make. I mean, are we going to continue to spend, in my opinion, more money than what we actually need to build projects, even though I love the bridge in Minneapolis. And I'm not gonna say that I don't. I love that bridge. But was there a way that we could shave off? It was around, you know, the cost between that bridge and the next bridge in line is, some people say it was $20 million. I think the number is closer to a $70 million difference when everything's figured in, especially the time that the project is delayed in or delivered in. Is that what we want? Is that what we want?
Senator Murphy, how come we always pick on sailors?
Yeah.
Can we pick on electricians once? Or?
No, not electricians. But we can pick on sailors. They are in, you know, they're part of a division of the Marine Corps, so.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Murphy, I have to really echo what Senator Moss said. I think it's inappropriate for you to take this out of Transportation Committee and bring it to the Tax Committee, hoping that you'll get a better result here. I don't sit on the Transportation Committee. I haven't heard this amendment, but the little bits and pieces that I'm picking up today is considering the lawsuit. This sounds like sour grapes amendment to me. I'm sorry. It does. It sounds like sour grapes. I think the exceeding the 120% threshold that the awarded contract, the awarded contract exceeded your 120% threshold, but I'm sure if I had the time to sit on committee and analyze, we got, and you keep saying you're giving us a mixed message, a wonderful project. So I'm not quite understanding what this amendment is doing here or what you're trying to accomplish.
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson, just so that it doesn't sound like I'm sending mixed messages, any time that you spend $70 million more dollars on a project, you're going to like the outcome. I like the outcome. Do I like how much it costs? Not necessarily.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
But, Senator Murphy, without sitting on the Transportation Committee, I would like to see what that $20 million or $70 million extra dollars is getting us. I'm sure that there was a reason for it.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson, there are some particular pieces of equipment that are coming along with the new bridge that other responders didn't have in their bids. Early warning detection system is one of them. Now, I believe that that is imperative that we start doing those on every bridge that's built. And I don't know why for the past 10 years we haven't been doing that, you know, especially knowing what we know now about bent gusset plates and gusset plates that fail, and the example from the state of Ohio. You know, but the bottom line is that if you have a tool in the toolbox, like design build slash best value, and you decide to use it, and you know, which is great because you know, you get projects delivered quicker, sometimes you get better products, you know, like the early warning detection system on the new 35W bridge. We also have to be cognizant of what we're spending for these projects. If you know, you spend, you know, 20 or 30 or $50 million too much or more on one project, we all know what that means. That means that there's probably a road project in your neck of the woods that isn't going to get done or in mine. And I think that we want the biggest bang for our buck. And is that putting all the eggs in one basket and saying, okay, we're going to spend $393 million for this bridge, you know, Bridge A, or are we going to spend $350 million on Bridge A and do the Devil's Triangle, for example? I mean, it's choices that need to be made, and I think that, you know, if we're looking at it in a fiscally prudent manner, you know, people always want two projects instead of one.
Senator Moore.
I'm done, Mr. Chair.
Third double.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm firmly for and against this amendment. come down strongly on that point. the truth is, Mr. Chair, I think Ms. Parker raises a good point. I think Senator Murphy acknowledged that you know, there were things that came forward on the 35W bridge that were innovative that MnDOT didn't even think about when they put together their RFP, and that's what attracted them to the FIG and iron whatever partnership. And I would hate to think that those would be unavailable to the state, you know, if all the provisions of this amendment were enacted, because there was some really great stuff and some new ideas, processes, technologies that maybe will be picked up more regularly in the state that we should benefit from in future bridge design and scoping and construction. On the other hand, you know, there's some good cleanup to the process, okay. And I can understand why some of the locals are unhappy with what happened and kind of their lack of awareness that some of this stuff was going to rise to the top and they didn't really have a chance to compete on the same ground. But you also need to reconcile, you know, some of the competitive stuff, some of the proprietary stuff. So I think it's amendment worth placing on the bill and propelling more discussion in the conference committee.
Well, Senator Dibble, I've always been, and having worked most of my life in the construction industry, I've always been concerned about design build and best value and the double-edged sword that it really is. And I think we felt the other end of the sword on the I-35 bridge, or at least the contractors that appeared to be low and didn't get the work may have felt like somebody else had some information about what might have given them an advantage. And anytime you allow for those kind of variables in a bidding process, there's always the possibility that somebody will know something that somebody else doesn't know that might somehow give them an advantage. And so my support for design build has always been tainted by that, I think. And I think it's an important discussion for the legislature to have, because what happened there is may have been perfectly legal, but it's a bit troubling. I think most everybody agrees with that. But Senator Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And going further with your thought process, maybe we could postpone and let this amendment work itself out a little more.
Well, Senator Johnson, this bill's certain for conference committee, because I think there's a provision or two in here that there's no way the House is going to take. So I think there'll be adequate time over the next month or so to see if it needs further changes. Senator Murphy?
Well, Senator Bach, I would have to say that I think there's provisions in this bill that concern members of the House, but they're going to take them anyway.
In the conference committee process?
Yes.
Not coming over from the Senate? Unlikely. Senator Johnson?
Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, is this? You said this amendment is in the House.
Mr. Chairman,
no.
In the policy bill?
No.
Ms. Parker is saying
no. Then maybe, Mr. Chairman, we shouldn't.
We have conflicting reports. We do have some folks in the room say that it is.
In the policy bill?
Mm-hmm.
Not in the policy bill.
It's in the finance committee.
Mr.
What bill is it in?
Does anybody else want to testify on the amendment? Mr. Wierke?
Mr. Chair, committee members, good morning. I'm Tim Wierke from the Associated General Contractors. Just a few very quick and brief comments to clarify the question. This bill, this amendment provision is in the Omnibus Transportation Policy Bill in the House, and it is proceeding there as well. Just a few quick comments about the provisions that Ms. Parker referenced with respect to value-laden elements that the state was able to secure with respect to the 35 bridge. The elements that she referenced in terms of smart bridge technology, terms of design charrettes are nominal in terms of their cost. When you look at the $57 million bid price proposal, those elements are certainly nominal, certainly in the realm of less than 10% of that total. I'm not sure what the numbers are per se, but we believe that this bill provides for our members that in the future will be proposing on these types of projects, provides those good government types of oversights that are necessary in order to bring about a level and fair playing field so that everyone knows what they are proposing, what the owner wants, and what types of costs or what types of resources are available in terms of making those proposals, so that not a lot of time and effort or expense is put in on the front end by a proposer only to find out that the rules could have changed and or the elements of the game have changed and now the owner wants something that's different. So we think that this provides that stability, that oversight, that economic certainty that's necessary in order to provide a good product for the state. And the last thing with respect to the fact that look at this as an anomaly, that this is something that happened under unique circumstances. I submit to the committee that it did happen. And if it happened and there were elements of this process that were found to be suspect or flawed, we feel it's our duty to bring those forward and bring those out to you so that they can be changed. Because if it happened once, it certainly could happen again under a different set of circumstances. So with that, thank you. I'll stand for any questions.
Any other questions, members? On the A50 amendment, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no?
No.
Motion prevails. A15 is adopted. Thank you. Any other amendments, members?
No.
You have anything more? Seeing no other amendments, Senator Larson renews his motion that Senate File 3223, as amended, be recommended to pass. Any other discussion, members? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no?
No.
Motion prevails. Bill's passed. Senator Murphy, congratulations.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members?
We have another hearing.
I don't like this bill.
Members, we don't have anything else on our agenda at this point. This room's going to be taken down soon for the Tax Conference Committee. So if we do end up with something more coming up, it's likely to be in a different room. But this committee's adjourned.